From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Davey Rothbart knows how to hustle. He started out as a Chicago Bulls ticket scalper, then created Found magazine and started writing for Ira Glass's This American Life. Rothbart has spent a lot of time traveling the country, the highways and byways, collecting girls and tales and stories all over. Now he's out with My Heart is an Idiot, his book of essays about life and love on the road, stories of humor, humanity, failings, frustration, heartbreak, down and out stories, up and in love stories. This hour on Point, Davey Rothbart and My Heart is an Idiot. You can join the conversation. Are you a fan? Are you envious of the wayfarer's life, the open, hustling heart? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me now from Dallas, Texas, is Davey Rothbart, author of the new book, My Heart is an Idiot, creator of Found magazine, and frequent contributor to public radio's This American Life. Davey Rothbart, welcome. Great to have you.
Thanks, man. What's up, Tom? Good to be with you.
It's good to have you. Could you please just explain the lifestyle that produced all this travel and all these stories? I mean, I'm looking at your current book tour. Maybe it's self-explanatory. 79-city book tour.
That 79 cities in 99 days.
It's crazy.
It's been a fun fall.
How's it work? How do you do it? You've been doing it for years, it looks like. What is this lifestyle?
You know, when I first moved to Chicago after college, all my friends were in bands. And what they would do is they would, they'd work hard for a couple of years and making an album, and then they would hop in a van, make, 202 peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, and drive around the country sharing their music with people. And I always felt like I liked to do the same. So whether it was Found magazine or this new book, My Heart is an Idiot, I thought, I've put years of work into the book. Wouldn't it be fun to share this stuff with people in 79 cities? So my brother Peter and I hopped in a van.
Yeah.
We've been driving around. We've about 55 cities in. We got 20-some to go to still. But it's been a lot of fun. And, of course, the road adventures accumulate when you're on the road that much, every year for the last 10 years.
Well, I have a real sense of that, having read this collection of essays, just how rich and wild it can be. So your style is you'll hit a town, probably evening, you'll do a reading. When the reading's over, you'll crash on somebody's couch or sleep in the van or hit the road and drive all night, be in another place the next night. It is rock band style.
It's really fun. I mean, I love meeting new people, and so every night, we get to see our friends that live scattered all around the country and reconnect with friends and family, but also to meet new people and, for people to show us the cool spots in their city. It's really a neat way to see the country and explore. And even when you're going to 79 cities, you meet interesting people just between cities. You get to see the natural beauty of the country. So it's been a really pretty amazing fall, and we're looking forward to the next few weeks.
I'm not sure from these stories if you're a messiah or a menace as you hit town, David Rothbart. I mean, you come in to Metallica
Fair
to get
point.
Revved up for your book appearance, and you come in with this heart that is almost, I mean, it is highly recognizably human, but it's almost beastly in its appetite to sort of find and connect. I mean, you got one sort of obsession and falling head over heels in love and love story and pick them up and move on. I mean, you've got every kind of configuration here of momentary passion. What is it about your heart? Why do you call your heart an idiot? I shouldn't go on about it. Let's hear from you.
My heart, it has been an idiot because, I have thrown myself into things, without maybe thinking it over. I do have the ability to fall in love pretty quickly, in an instant. And also, I think one thing that was interesting from writing the stories is it gave me a chance to get perspective over some of my experiences. These are, 16 true life tales. Many of them are about love and relationships, my own misadventures in that mm-hmm. arena. And then a lot of them are about interesting people I've met on the road in the last 10 years and strangers who have come into my life and really inspired me or changed me in some way. But what I've learned by talking to people this fall as we've been doing this My Heart is an Idiot book tour is how many other people seem to, that phrase seems to resonate with them. It seems like all of our hearts are an idiot in one way or another.
We're going to tool around the country with you. We're going to hear some of these stories. We're going to fall into those paths of love with you. And it's not all romance, but there is a lot in here. But let us get to know you a little bit better first. The very first essay in here is about your childhood. And it's interesting. It's in Michigan. And
yep.
Your mom has a very distinctive feature that you had kind of some demonic kid fun with. Tell us about that. This first essay.
So my mom is deaf, and I've actually done a couple of This American Life stories about her. And not too long ago, a magazine asked me to write, called Guilt and Pleasure. They asked me to write about a about, you know, what it was like to grow up with a deaf mom. And I think they wanted something maybe a little sentimental, like some of the This American Life pieces. And I decided to take it in another direction. And I wrote about what it was like for me and my brothers to grow up with a deaf mom, to take advantage of her deafness and to torment her. And I would say that it's, you know, every kid finds a way to take advantage of their parents and to kind of, you know, get away with stuff. It just happened to be a little easier, and we happened to find more ingenious ways to do it because she was deaf.
Tell us about the stuff. Like what?
The story is bigger, and it's called Bigger and Deafer. The first story, In My Heart Is an Idiot. And for example, you know, I got in trouble at school, so the principal's calling my mom. And of course, now my mom has a operator-assisted phone where they can tell her what other people are saying.
Today she does, but not then.
Right, right.
You were her assistant
wasn't
on
there.
The phone.
Mm-hmm. I was her translator. And so you know, I told the principal, hey, if you're going to call and talk to my mom, you got to wait till I get home so I can tell her what you're saying. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, you know, when they called to say I'd gotten in trouble, and yeah, maybe I changed what they were saying just a little bit as I
or a lot.
Translated it to my mom, or a lot. Maybe I told them that it wasn't that I'd, you know, used profanities in music class. Maybe it was that I had saved a pink butterfly on the playground from kids who were trying to rip its wings off.
So you escape that and leave them shaking their heads as your mom says, oh, that's nice.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Thanks for the beautiful story.
Describe the phantom doorbell trick for us.
Well, they had our house, they had a doorbell at the back door, and then somebody had, like, they had attached a one-room addition. Mm-hmm. So there was now a doorbell in the middle of the house. And, of course, we had a family dog named Prince, who was trained to fetch my mom anytime someone came to the door and rang the doorbell. Mm-hmm. So we learned that my mom had never spotted this doorbell in the middle of the house. We learned that we could press this doorbell, and Prince would run and grab her and bring her to the front door, and she'd look out at the, you know, empty front porch. And I say it was like playing Ding Dong Ditch from the comfort of our own house, and that even my dad would get in on the action.
I started to really think, oh my gosh, that's this poor mom at this point. And then there's your kind of favorite trick where you'd bring other boys over, stand behind her in the kitchen, basically yell obscenities at your mom, call her names. She being completely deaf, had no idea. The kids thought this was hilarious.
Sounds cruel. I maintain any kid with a deaf mom has done stuff like this at some point in their life. Maybe it's doing what I talk about, you know, riding around with her in her Aerostar, you know, blasting Def Leppard at rock concert volume, putting an NWA tape in the glove box, from the glove box into the tape deck every time we sat next to a police officer at a stoplight.
That may be fun. But I have to say, the other two, the phantom doorbell and screaming at her from behind in the kitchen while your fellow buddies yucked. I mean, I'm wading into the book here and I'm thinking, oh boy, I don't know.
This guy may be too sadistic for
me. I mean, watch out, girls. Well, gather up the women and children. Davy Rothbard's coming to town.
Well, turnabout is fair play, and you know, as the story continues, I at the end, it's really my mom who gets the last laugh, because I don't want to give away too much, but as it turns out, she had her own little game going on. While we thought we were putting one over on her, she was actually putting one over on us.
Are these essays fact or fiction? I found myself not entirely believing your mom's assertion or your depiction of it at the end of that essay. Now, maybe that's just me as a skeptical reader, but we've been through a lot in recent years, you know, about phonied up fact here.
And, sure. Well, the stories are all true, and they're all fact. But it is interesting at the end of the story, you know, my mom kind of says, she claims to me at the end of the story that she knew all along we were playing this doorbell trick on her. And what's been really cool about doing this tour this fall is that I've gotten to see a lot of the characters, I say characters, a lot of the real people from this book, mm-hmm. in a lot of the cities that we've gone to. So, for example, in New York, we saw that there's a story called Canada or Bust about this kid named Hakeem, and he surprised us at the event in New York. There's a story, Human Snowball, which we might get into later.
Yeah.
This girl, Lauren Hill, she now lives in Denver, so I got to see her a couple weeks ago at the reading. So it's cool that even though these stories, you know, are complete within the book, my relationship with these people continues. So my mom was at our event in Seattle. She happened to be out there that weekend, and I brought her up. I read that story, Bigger and Deafer, the one about her that leads off the collection. And she came up on stage, and I asked her that. I said, did you really know about the doorbell the whole time? And it was actually your game that you were playing on us, your trick on us. And she said she did know about the doorbell, because I didn't know if she had just claimed that or if that was really the case. She said she did know about the doorbell. She did not know about some of the stuff on the phone.
Antics
when
behind
I
her back or the phone. I mean, who am I to judge? I didn't have a deaf mom, and she must still see something in you, son, because you stay at the end. She still copy reads your essays as you write them, so she's still in your corner.
She's awesome. She's actually, yeah, the one, my editor, Sean McDonald, and my mom were the ones I would send these essays to as I wrote them. My mom's really cool. Yeah, it's funny because I was surprised that some people would read that first essay and be taken aback by it because my mom is just so cool about it and just thinks it's hilarious.
What about your high women romantic lifestyle at age 37 now? Is she saying, Davey, settle down? Or how cute?
My mom is really supportive of all of my decision. She does give me some counseling though. She sometimes does step in and try to try to give me some advice, which I appreciate.
We're going to hear some of these stories. Davey Rothbart is with us. You may know him from This American Life. He's on a 79 city and town tour of America with his new book, My Heart is an Idiot. His favorite warm-up song for those book signing appearances, Metallica's One behind us right here. Davey, rock out there in Dallas. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour with This American Life star Davey Rothbart, author, essayist, road warrior, romantic, about life and love on the road, and his new book, My Heart is an Idiot, joins us from the middle or maybe two-thirds in to a 79-city book tour with the book. He's in Dallas, Texas today. You may know him from Ira Glass's This American Life. Here's a little bit from the 2011 film, My Heart is an Idiot, directed by David Mikkeljohn. Davey Rothbart here talking out on the highway of life to friends and strangers about love.
I'm looking for advice because I need it with regards to girls and stuff, right?
Well, you're a total romantic. I mean, that
hopeless,
is a piece of it.
You're
a
hopeless
yeah.
romantic.
You move around too much, probably. If you're traveling and going places, how do you know you're not getting into trouble?
If you really wanted to, then you would do it. Nothing is stopping you.
Nothing is stopping you from I'm not sure what, from much of anything. David, we've got feedback online here already. Here's a listener who says, what a great title. My Heart is an Idiot. Says there's no better description for the heart and how it acts separately from one's mind. The heart will say what the mind won't. Though I'd never feel it again, I did. And even though I was rejected, it was worth every painful moment. Definitely an idiot move made by my heart. So give us a couple of the main threads of your idiocy of your heart.
It does seem to resonate with people. And for me, yes, my heart is an idiot. But what you know, as I wrote these stories, and they were as this listener wrote, you know, some really painful and humiliating experiences. Looking back at some of these, you know, missteps I'd made in with love and relationships, but I found that as the director Albert Brooks said, tragedy plus time equals comedy. And as you know, enough time had passed since some of these experiences happened that I was able to look back at them and see them for the humorous, hilarious situations that they really were, and the pain has, you know, it's not quite as sharp as it was in the moment that these things happen.
Yes, I suppose you can look back on it that way. New York Times writes you up, says, the book My Heart is an Idiot is primarily an inventory, however frank, of women Rothbart fell in love with from across a bar, picked up, discarded, then picked up again, recounted in long, rueful prose. Sometimes it's tough on you. Sometimes it's tough on the woman, the girl. Sometimes it's great for everybody. You've got this one called Human Snowball. Well, I'd like to talk about it, but maybe you could just jump in from the top and read a little bit, Davey.
Well, here's the story. Yeah, I'll give you the first couple paragraphs of the story, and we can talk about this story. It's called Human Snowball. It's the second story in My Heart is an Idiot, and it starts out like this. On February 14th, 2000, I took the Greyhound bus from Detroit to Buffalo, New York, to visit a girl named Lauryn Hill. Not Lauryn Hill the singer, who did that cover of Killing Me Softly, but another Lauryn Hill who'd gone to my high school and now, almost 10 years later, was about to become my girlfriend, I hoped. I'd seen her at a party when she was home in Michigan over the holidays, and we'd spent the night talking and dancing. Around 4 in the morning, when the party closed down, we'd kissed for about 12 minutes out on the street, as thick, heavy snowflakes swept around us, melting on our eyebrows and eyelashes. She'd left town the next morning, and in the 6 weeks since, we'd traded a few soulful letters and had two very brief, awkward phone conversations. As Valentine's Day came near, I didn't know if I should send her flowers, call her, not call her, or what. I thought it might be romantic to just show up at her door and surprise her.
And so opens Human Snowball in My Heart is an Idiot. Now, this is for Lauryn Hill. We had Wycliffe Jean on recently. Lauryn Hill was, a girl. The other Lauryn Hill was a girl. But this is just a girl in a bar, and you're driving a very long way to see her, and you show up late at night, and these stories go in all kinds of directions. But this one is kind of Dickensian, but with a few six-packs in a way. Describe the cast of characters that assemble here.
I've met on the bus a guy who claims, and I believe it, that he's about to turn 110 years old at midnight. Mm-hmm. He's come up from Little Rock, Arkansas to visit his great-granddaughter in Buffalo. And we kind of get to talking and hang out. And my friend who picks me up when we get to the bus station in Buffalo is an old friend named Chris, who is, among other things, a car thief. It's basically his 9-to-5 job.
And you're in one of his the fruit of his labor there.
Yes. So we're driving around in an SUV that Chris has stolen the night before. And, you know, we go to see Lauryn Hill at this bar where she works.
So this is you and the car thief and the 110-year-old African-American guy you met on the bus.
Exactly.
In a really sort of a tough bar there.
Yes, like a locals bar in Buffalo. Mm-hmm. Things don't go quite as hoped when I first see Lauryn. It's not the, you know, glowing reception I would have hoped. But, you know, she says, come back later when I get off work. So we roll around Buffalo, and over the course of the night, we accumulated a pretty interesting cast of characters in Chris's SUV. I shouldn't call it Chris's since he'd just stolen it the night before. But mm-hmm. including, you know, Vernon, the 110-year-old guy's great-granddaughter, her daughter's ex-husband and his new girlfriend, and he who worked at a Chinese restaurant, so the owner of the Chinese restaurant and his family.
And his wife and his daughter, who's just fired the guy who worked for him, and you're kind of maybe making up here in this car, maybe not.
I love meeting people. I love new people coming into my life. And so that happened times 11 that night in Buffalo. And each of these people, though, I just felt, you know, I felt close to them in a way, and I just felt connected to them. Each of them had their own hopes and dreams and of how the night might work out. And in a way, just by being together, something larger happened, I think, between all of us that kind of buoyed all of us. And so it was a special night, whether or not things had worked out with Lauryn Hill. And they did work out in a way at the end of the night with her, maybe temporarily. But at least, you know, I got the kiss I'd taken a Greyhound bus to Buffalo for. But something about the magic of being with these 11 strangers, now friends. I mean, that's what the story is about and what the book is about.
You end up in the snow outside of this bar, this tough bar in Buffalo, and it's almost, maybe this is the Punksters' It's a Wonderful Life, if they ever shoot this one. And it's very heartwarming, but it is crazy at the same time, like many of the stories in Debbie Rothbart's My Heart is an Idiot. He's on the road talking up the book. He's with us from Dallas, Texas. You may know him from This American Life. We've got calls for you, Davey. Sophia in New York City. Sophia, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi, Sophia.
Hi, how are you?
Pretty good. How are you doing? Thanks for being on with us.
Do you know Davey Rothbart?
Yeah, I met him at a spelling bee for cheaters in Ann Arbor at a bar, and then I saw his show in New York, and I just wanted to say hi.
What's a spelling bee for cheaters, Sophia?
It was like a spelling bee event from a tutoring place that they sponsored with like kind of like a comedy meet spelling bee. And it was just a really fun local event.
So 826 Michigan is a great organization. Dave Eggers, a good friend, started these 826 youth writing organizations. There's six of them, including one in Boston, one in Chicago, one in D.C., one in New York, and one in L.A. And Seattle. So they and a fundraiser at the Michigan location was a spelling bee where the contestants were allowed to cheat. If they raised enough money for 826 Michigan, they were allowed to cheat and get letters, you know, extra bonus letters spelled out for them. So that's why it was 826 for cheaters. And Sophia's a great example. A friend of mine named John Bacon, who wrote a great book called Three and Out about Michigan football. You know, Sophia was a friend of his, and he brought her to this event and got to know her. And now, she, you know, I consider her a good friend. And it's just, you know, that's part of why we do a trip like this, going to 79 cities, is to get to know people and to hear their stories.
Sophia, can you explain? You've seen Davey in action then. We've read all these stories. Can you explain what it is about him that keeps all these young women across the country kind of coming into his orbit and sticking around for these adventures, misadventures? What is it about this guy?
He's very sincere and charming. You can tell he just tells it how it is, and he actually, like, very patient with the audience. Like, he was genuinely interested in meeting all his guests, which was surprising. Like, very sincere and down to earth and not faking it at all. Like, very interested in other people and their stories, even though he's the main event. So I think that's very refreshing, especially to girls.
Let me ask you, the Los Angeles Times writes him up, August Brown there, and says he's, as a storyteller, they say he's sociopathic in a good way. Is this the bad boy appeal, Sophia?
Fine line between genius and madness. So, yes, definitely bad boy appeal in a good way.
Sophia, thanks very much for your call. Sharon in Virginia Beach, Virginia. Sharon, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, how are you?
Pretty well.
What's up, Sharon?
Good. I was calling about your deaf mom, because
yes.
I also grew up with a deaf mom, and I bet all of those stories are 100%, because we did all the same things.
Did you stand behind her and yell obscenities at her back and have your friends chuckle on the floor?
We not only did that, but we sat, like, in the car. We would, like, duck behind the seats so she couldn't see us in the rearview mirror and, like, talk bad things about her right behind her.
So are you, Sharon, are you saying that Tom Ashbrook should take back his comment that I was sadistic when he first read that story?
Absolutely. Because it's common. Because I think that it's 100% natural with a deaf mom. I think it's sort of your job as their child.
Wow. Tom, okay. I have not walked a mile in these shoes. I acknowledge the fraternity and sorority of children of deaf moms, but I have to say my heart was with your mom. Now, but Sharon,
fair enough.
I appreciate your call, Sharon. There's another tale in here, Shade, that's more straightforward for a while, kind of almost love story, where you spend a lot of time in New Mexico, you've got an old movie image in mind, it's taking you down there to a sort of dust-covered diner, at least in your imagination, and then more. And you've got a telephone relationship with a young woman who works for a college newspaper down there. You finally end up meeting her. Maybe you could set up a little reading for us, Davey. Tell us about this story.
Definitely. Well, there, you know, it starts out with me talking about this film I'd seen when I was 17 years old, Gas Food Lodging, directed by Allison Anders. And this character in the movie named Shade, played by Fairuza Balk. And I felt like Shade was this ideal girl soulmate. And so for years, I'd been trying to find a girl like Shade.
She was a sad girl. You kind of like sad, wan girls from reading what you're writing.
I think so. I think there's something, when you meet someone like that, you feel that they, you know, I've been blessed in my life. I haven't had to go through a lot of really dark things. And yet, I still have felt sadness. And when you meet a girl who's been through some stuff, then you feel like, you know, maybe they understand the deeply textured parts of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and of course, there's some great joy to feeling like you can alleviate, even for one moment, any bit of suffering they may have experienced.
And you're so, such a wild-eyed optimist, you imagine you're going to fly down there after months and months of intimate conversations with her. You're going to meet her at the airport. It's going to be great. You've already planned a week-long road trip with this young woman you've never, ever met.
Right, and never seen a picture of or anything. So this is a girl named Sarah, and the story is Shade, In My Heart Is an Idiot, the book. So I arrived at the airport in Tucson, and I felt a tap on the shoulder and heard her breathe my name from behind, Davey. I whipped around and found myself facing a plain-looking stranger. Long, wavy hair, a wide face and upturned nose, a slanted smile. Who else could it be but her? Still, it took me a second and a half to realize that this was Sarah. Well, she said with a cute, nervous shrug, stepping to me and putting her arms around me. I hugged her back, bummed that she wasn't as beautiful as I'd imagined, and disappointed that a moment which should have been deliriously happy instead felt a bit awkward and off-kilter. But in a way, I'd prepared myself for this. I knew that once we met in the flesh, I'd have to start building things with the real person Sarah was and let go of the girl I'd imagined her to be. Even as a frightening sense of doom flitted close, I did my best to scuttle it. After all, I was happy to be here, with this girl who loved me and was up for adventure. I broke the hug off and smiled and took another long look at her. And it goes on from there.
Yes, it does. There's some great adventure. It doesn't last all that long. Davy Rothbart, In My Heart Is an Idiot, flying all the way to Tucson to go on a road trip with a girl he's never met other than long phone calls. And I found myself wondering, especially at this moment, when, you know, you finally meet her and her roommate has told you that she is hot, hot, hot. But obviously, immediately, that's not what you're feeling. And you're sort of pulling away from her, even as she's shown up, you know, blind date to meet you, pick you up, go on this thrill adventure of a life. You're pulling away. And I found myself, did you fly down there because you were really that infatuated? Or is the editor of Found Magazine always looking for a story and thinking, oh, good material here? Sarah.
Well, you know, no, I was that infatuated. And to make it clear, you know, none of the stories in My Heart Is an Idiot, you know, it's not stunt journalism. None of these events was I like, you know, oh, this would make a good story. I should go do this. Honestly, it was just looking back over things I've done and experiences I've had and adventures I've gone through. I was able to, you know, realize there are some good stories in here. And perhaps there was moments where even in a dark time, even when, you know, something really painful was happening, some part of me, it might have blunted the pain of it just for me to imagine, hey, this maybe I could write about this one day, you know. But I never go into an experience, you know, looking for a story. I go into an experience because I want to be there and I want to make this great love happen. And if it doesn't happen, then at least I have something to write about.
You're a dangerous man, Davy Rothbart. Julie in Elizabethtown, Kentucky. You're on the air with Davy Rothbart. Hi, Julia.
Hi. I just wanted to say that I think your lifestyle is great. And us folks out here listening, you know, that are just kind of anchored down in small towns, raising kids and working day in, day out jobs and doing the routine, we need, you know, free-spirited, vagabond storyteller types to keep us inspired. And I guess we can kind of live vicariously through you a little bit. Storytellers are wonderful. So.
Thank you. I mean, there's a little bit of a grass is greener effect that happens when me and my brother Peter hit the road on a tour like this. And I mean, you know, read these stories. You know, read My Heart Is an Idiot. And there will be moments in there where you're happy that you're not me and that you haven't gone through some of these things, because it's not always the most fun, but there is always humor in it looking back at it. And you know, sometimes I'll say this. I am happy to have living a life on the road and to be having so many adventures. But at the same time, there is a grass is greener thing where my brother and I will stay with friends that live in Austin, Texas, or New Orleans, or Kansas City, and we'll say, you know, wow, they have, you know, they work 9 to 5, but they have a beautiful house, you know, they have a beautiful family, you know, wouldn't this be a life that we'd like to live one day? So it goes, the vicariousness goes both ways.
Yeah, and there it is, on the highway. Julie in Kentucky, thanks very much for your call. Davy Rothbart is with us. His new book is My Heart Is an Idiot. Shade, little phone calls for months and then off on the road, and pretty soon we run over a gigantic elk and there's blood flying everywhere and lies flying everywhere and life takes another turn. My Heart Is an Idiot. John Mellencamp's Little Pink Houses. Pink House is one of his favorite songs. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point. Talking this hour with This American Life star, Davy Rothbart, author, essayist, road warrior, romantic about life and love on the road, and his new book, My Heart Is an Idiot, a kind of highwayman of the heart, a collection of essays, stories from years of time, a lot of it on the road, a lot of it pushing one artistic project or another. His new book is My Heart Is an Idiot. It's not all about the ladies. You pick up a hitchhiker in Arizona. This is up, getting up toward the higher country there, Flagstaff. It's called How I Got These Boots, this story essay. I wonder if you'd read the top of it for us, Davy.
Absolutely, absolutely. How I Got These Boots. Just past Flagstaff he appeared, a tiny grizzled man on the shoulder of Highway 64 with his thumb out, wearing a backpack bigger than himself. I pulled over a little ways past him and climbed out of the car and watched him waddle toward me. A tin canteen and a pair of hiking boots with red laces dangled from his pack, clanking together every couple of steps. His short white hair, creased face, smudged with dirt, rumpled jeans, and oil-stained sneakers gave him the look of a homeless track coach. "Young man, thanks for stopping," he said, thrusting it out of hand. "Name's John Malloy. Where you headed? Where you headed?" "The Grand Canyon," I said. His eyes sparkled. "Bingo, me too." In the car, headed west again, John told me his story. For 35 years, he'd worked in a machine shop in Lowell, Massachusetts. But his lifelong dream was to visit the Grand Canyon. He'd read dozens of books about it, studied its geology and its history. He'd even cut out pictures from National Geographic and pasted them to the wall above his bed. A few weeks before, he'd been talking about the Grand Canyon with the guys he worked with, and one of them had said, "For Christ's sake, shut up already. What is it with you? It's always the Grand Canyon this, the Grand Canyon that. Look, you'll never make it there, and it's depressing to hear you going on and on about it every damn day." John looked at me with a mischievous glint, so I said to him, "Okay, I quit." Turned in my tools and walked out.
And Davy Roberts, as he conveys in "My Heart is an Idiot," took John the last length to the Grand Canyon. You were there when he gazed upon it for the first time.
I felt so lucky, you know, to pick up a hitchhiker, and he tells me his lifelong dream is to go to the Grand Canyon, to be the one to give him a ride the last 2 hours to the edge of the canyon, to witness that moment as he thrust his fist in the air and looked out across the canyon for the first time. It was really magical. And, you know, we kind of hit it off. We hiked down into the canyon together. We camped out that weekend. And he was really an inspiring guy. And I feel like, you know, whenever I engage with strangers, I'm always rewarded. Whether it's picking up a hitchhiker — I don't pick up every hitchhiker I see, but one in 20, you know, if I feel safe, if the situation's right. Every hitchhiker I've picked up, every guy sitting next to me on a bar stool, everyone sitting next to me on a Greyhound bus, like we talked about earlier, you know, when I take the time to actually start talking to this person, it always enriches my life. And so on this tour we're doing this fall, and a lot of the stories, I think, in My Heart is an Idiot are about people like that, people like John Malloy, people like Hakeem, I mentioned, from the story Canada or Bust, you know, people who times when I ran out of gas or had a flat tire. The last story in the book is called "Ain't That America," and I ran out of gas in Death Valley outside of Joshua Tree National Park, and I was picked up by this former Marine and his family, and, you know, and that led to its own sort of really important experience. And mm-hmm. So, you know, I feel like when you do open yourself to other people, I'm always rewarded.
You're John Malloy, your hitchhiker there out of the machine tool shop, found the end of his road, and it was kind of his paradise. He knew everything about Grand Canyon. They ended up hiring him there, and you've got this image of him, the little snapshot of him with his fists in the air at the edge of the canyon, his dreamland, on your dashboard as you move on. You're 37 now. What's the end of your road? Or you say it's not stunt journalism, but do you have to stay on the road to keep finding your stories? Or is there an end?
So.
Is there a Grand Canyon for you?
You know, I live in Ann Arbor, Michigan, my hometown, mm-hmm. and I live in Los Angeles part of the time. And honestly, just exploring my new neighborhood in Los Angeles, Echo Park, you know, walking around, I meet interesting people close to home. You know, you don't have to live a life on the road to have road adventures, to have interesting experiences. I think those happen to you. You know, I don't have a car in LA. I walk, ride a bike, and take the bus. And on the bus, I'll talk to people, or people will talk to me. And I've made friends on the bus in LA. And I think it's really just about having an openness to the people around you.
But that on-the-road image is strong in the book. Garrett writes to us here. He says, as a journalist myself, he writes to us online. Garrett says, you spend a better part of a decade on the road riding, wandering in search of people, places, things, chaotic or not, for good or ill. He says, Rothbart is an inspiration for me. He asks you, he says, what is it about the American open road that appeals to you and continually keeps you in search? And he says, is the search, you know, the passion itself? Are you looking for something? What is it about it?
It's connecting with other people. You know, and that happens when you're on the road. It happens more often. When you are at home, you're right. Like, you stick to people you know, generally the places you know. When you're on the road, you're exploring a new place every day. You are meeting, you know, people are coming into your orbit that you have never met before, and hearing their stories is, to me, what gets me so high. I mean, that's why I've been interested in journalism, in reporting for a show like This American Life. You know, it's that curiosity that I think a lot of us have about other people's lives. That's what Found Magazine is all about, and that's what the stories in My Heart is an Idiot are about. In fact, I wanted to mention that Sharon called in from Virginia Beach, whose mom was deaf, and that story, Bigger and Deafer, you can actually, there's a website, myheartisanidiotbook.com, And on that MyHeartIsAnIdiotBook.com website, it has the whole first story from the book, Bigger and Deafer, which shares the story of my deaf mom, in case anyone listening relates to that story and wants to check it out. There's also some great videos, including my dad rapping about his favorite story from the collection. But I appreciate Garrett's email. I've been inspired myself by people who have taken it on the road. You know, John Steinbeck, Travels with Charlie, Jack Kerouac on the road. People like Jim Carroll, who lived in New York City and, you know, he wrote Basketball Diaries. There's a book he wrote called Forced Entries about his own adventures just within New York City. He didn't leave the city, but just being there and meeting interesting folks that lived in his neighborhood, to me that was also a way of proving that you don't have to necessarily hit the road to have these kinds of really fascinating adventures.
Paul's calling from up in the Adirondacks in New York. Paul, thanks. You're on the air with Davey.
Well, hi, Tom. Thanks very much. This is great. Davey, hello.
Hey, Paul. What's up?
Not much. I'm absolutely loving this. This is great. I've, at different points in my life, had very similar experiences. I worked in a ski resort for a number of years, and in the off-season would just kind of travel around like you described it, with family and friends and meeting people. And one of the things that I've always found as an interesting point, and I've been intrigued in your take on this, is that the moment of sort of trying to break through the surface tension when you show up in a new town and you don't know anybody and you're trying to meet someone to start the ball rolling of, here's someone new and you introduce their friends and all of these connections that you're describing happen. But there's that moment, for me at least, of surface tension, of trying to find that first contact, or trying to push in. What's that like for you?
Yeah, that's a great way to put it, because you're right. Once you do make that first connection, then somebody is excited to share the rest of their world with you and share the rest of their town with you. And so, you know, I've been lucky enough on these, you know, on the My Heart is an Idiot, on the book tour, on Found Magazine tours, for people to want to bring me in and show me around. But often, when I've landed in a city and haven't known anyone, I'll tell you the ways that I've broken the surface tension. Pick up basketball. I like playing basketball. You play basketball at some court, you know, and you kind of get to know people just through that. You talk with them a little bit. Next thing you know, they're taking you out and showing you around their town or their favorite hiking trails or their favorite bar or whatever it might be. I would say just going to a bar. I mean, it could be 3 p.m, but going to a bar, it's pretty easy to strike up a conversation with a stranger and start things going. And I also just recently have gotten into playing pool. I'm not very good, but it's kind of another fun way, like pick up basketball, you know, go into any little dingy truck stop lounge or a roadside tavern, and there's usually a pool table. Play a couple games of pool with somebody, especially if you lose to them, they're in a better mood. They, you know, kind of way to break the ice.
I don't know if Paul's going to have quite the same degree of openness as you. You've got the story, what are you wearing, where you get a random, it seems, phone call in your motel room somewhere with this breathy whisper, and you strike up quite a sexual phone relationship with this person for months. And then finally meet this person, and it may not be the gender that you expected. This struck me. To be fair, what about to be fair?
Well, I was going to say, to be fair, you know, that was her striking up this phone sex relationship with me. This
takes two to have it, I think.
I don't know that I would have tried to strike up a friendship in quite that manner.
Yeah.
But when the phone call came,
you were on it, and it was for the next six months.
I was willing to indulge. I was willing to see where things would lead. This mysterious phone call in the middle of the night at a motel room outside of Austin, Texas. This girl wanted to get all hot and heavy, so why not mess around, see what would happen? And it sort of grew, though, into this kind of emotional connection and this real deeper friendship. And so, of course, I was curious to find out who this woman was and to go back to Texas and you know, get to know this person.
Of course, you would fly down to an Applebee's and meet this quote-unquote woman.
I drove past that Applebee's yesterday, man. It was hilarious. I was just thinking back on that moment. Even if this woman didn't turn out to be exactly who I had imagined her to be, that soulful emotional connection remained. And the friendship continues, and I'm going to see her tomorrow. What is it? Thursday. You know, we're doing these events all over the country. So we're going to be in Austin, Texas soon. We're going to Dallas, Houston, North Carolina, New Orleans, Kansas City. We're still have about 20 cities left on the tour, and so I'll see her again. And that friendship continues to this day.
I'm still looking at this thought here in the Times Review. My Heart is an Idiot, and Stephen Rinella, who says, it seems far-fetched that Rothbart, a frequent contributor to This American Life, would consistently stumble on characters so memorable and fully formed, let alone remember entire conversations. You don't tape this stuff. But such is the modern personal essay from the house of Ira Glass. It should be called something else, this reviewer writes, other than nonfiction. Reenact mention, perhaps. What about that? Are you going to insist on the nonfiction quality of this, or is there? Do you grant there's an element of burnishing, maybe?
I kind of insist on the nonfiction mm-hmm. label, and you know, I was talking about somebody. I'm not a book critic or a literary critic, but somebody was mentioned that specific paragraph to me, and they said, yeah, there is already a term for this genre, and it's called creative nonfiction. So I don't think. You know, yes, there's, you know, I can't remember dialogue specifically word for word something that happened 12 years ago.
Tom Wolfe was there a long time ago now, so it's not as if that your footprints are the first ones on this sand.
Yeah, we're not inventing this genre. I think it's personal essays. You know, it's, yes, you know, sometimes you'll combine two characters into one just so it makes more sense and it's not too hard for people to sift through this story. But it's nonfiction. You know, it's all true stories, for better or worse. Yeah. I think it's just, you know, it's us, it's storytelling, personal storytelling, which has always been one of my favorite genres of you know, writing, radio, or film.
Not everybody's on board. Deborah writes to us. She says, it sounds to me like Davy Rothbart has confused love with lust. His heart would do well to wise up and learn the difference. Advice for you there, Davy. Advice. Ben in Jamaica Plain is calling. Hi, Ben. You're on the air with Davy Rothbart.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Davy.
What's up, Ben?
I just wanted to share a story. This was back in 2004. It was my freshman year of college. I was falling in love for the first time with this girl, and we really bonded over Sound Magazine. We used to, you know, find things in the ground and share them with each other.
Nice.
And our first date was actually seeing you on one of your Found Magazine tours in New York. And so we saw you, and we kind of hung around after, and we got to talking. And we had this magical moment where we actually ended up all dancing with you. And it was just a really magical memory, my first time being in love and this magical moment with you. So I wanted to thank you for that.
Oh, thank you for coming out that night and for sharing that story, because to me that's what it's about. That's why we go to all these cities. That's why we're going to 20 more cities this fall, is to meet people like you. And what's cool, Ben, about hearing that story is on this trip this fall, we have met, my brother and I have met a bunch of people who have said that a Found Magazine show or some earlier event we did was their first date. Or that they had actually met. Some people, couples told us they had actually met at one of our Found Magazine events years ago and now are married, now have kids. And so, you know, you get a sense for, I don't know, hopefully the energy is infectious enough. And whatever, Ben, what happened with you and this girl, though?
we did it for about 2 years. But, you know, some of my best memories, you know, are back there. So it was definitely a good start.
Hey, Ben, let me take you as a real-world test here. Los Angeles Times calls Davy a manic pixie beta male whose foibles would be a five-alarm warning siren off the page. Is that the way he hit you, dancing that night with you and your girl?
He was definitely infectious. So there was some magic about him that, you know, really just had shown through in speaking to him. I couldn't put my finger on it exactly, but it definitely stuck out in my memory. And I always share that story with people.
Can we get a witness? Yes, we can. Ben, I appreciate your call. One more. Keisha in Hartsville, South Carolina. Keisha, you're on with Davy Rothbart.
Hi, Davy. Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I just want to say, you know, this discussion is awesome. And I wanted to know what Davy's thoughts are of using Facebook and the social media of today. I mean, because a lot of us can't travel. You know, there's financial issues that make it hard for people to actually get on the road and meet new people. But do you think, Facebook and Twitter, those kinds of things, can actually give people that kind of experience?
The open road of Facebook? I don't know. What do you say, Davy?
Well, here's where I think you're coming from, and I totally understand, is that there is that experience of, you know, maybe on Facebook you get to know somebody in a way that, you know, a lot of the stories in My Heart is an Idiot are about imagining somebody to be, you know, a perfect soulmate. And then the clash between who you imagine them to be and the soulful connection you might have with them versus what it's like in real life when you actually meet them. And sometimes it's that connection is truly there and it works, and sometimes it doesn't. So, I mean, I think that there's both a thrill to, you know, glimpsing somebody on Facebook and, you know, they post it on your friend's page and you click on their profile and you wonder, who is this person all about? You start looking at the stuff they're into. This could be a soulmate of mine. You know, there's a thrill to it, but then there's also a danger where, you know, you're sort of filling in the blanks yourself and imagining them to be, you know, who you're creating them to be. There's an ever-present allure to doing that. I don't know how it always works out, but I say why not take a swing of the bat? If there's somebody in your life who you feel attracted to who you don't know that well, why not try to get to know them? You'll find out whether it's going to work or not. Why not swing the bat and see?
Thank you, Keisha, for your call. Debbie, we've got less than a minute here. And I found myself wondering at the end of this collection, still wondering if you're are you chained to that road? You say it's not stunt journalism, but man, you dig up some great stories out there. Do you think you can bring your writer's eye? Could you bring it home to a place where Facebook was your window on the world, where you weren't on the great highway of life, and find the same majesty?
Nah, I'll always want to travel. You're right. I can't be chained to one spot, but but My Heart Is an Idiot, I think it's not a book just about being on the road. It's about the adventures you have when you come into contact with other people. So no matter where I am, I'll find interesting people to consort with and get to know.
There's an excerpt at our website, onpointradio.org. David Rothbart's book, you may have noticed, is My Heart Is an Idiot. He joined us today from in the midst of his 79-city book tour from Dallas, Texas. Davey, thank you very much for being with us today.
Tom, thank you so much.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.